Howdy do, buggeroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. Today is Friday. It is the 8th of October, 2021. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. And because it's Friday, I am here with Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, happy Friday, everyone.
Yes, and happy Secure Your S Friday. Hi, Nate. We are here to talk to you about some security news and some security updates. And we're here to start with some good security news.
Yes. So Yubico, they make these, they're security keys. These are used for two-factor authentication. So instead of having a time-based code in your password manager, for example, you can plug one of these things in and authenticate that way. So they released a new version. It's called the YubiKey Bio Series. And this is their first authenticator that has fingerprint authentication. So okay. That's really cool news. They say it is available in USB-A and USB-C form factors.
Even better.
And it's available for purchase for the USB-A form factor for $80 and $85 for USB-C. So if you already use a YubiKo or you're interested in one, I think you should maybe check this one out.
Yeah, this is definitely a good idea. YubiKo is one of those second factors when we talk about multi-factor authentication or two-factor authentication. Instead of getting a text message with a code sent to you, you can actually just use one of these things. This is similar to if you've ever used like bank authenticators or things like that. It's like a little thing that you put on your keys and you stick it in your computer when you need it. It's similar to that. So it makes things a lot more secure, but also very easy because as long as you have that thing, you just plug it in and then you're all set to go. So it's uh-huh. interesting that they are adding those with biometrics. That seems pretty cool. So we wanted to start off on a happy note today. Yeah. So there you go. Next, we have a proposed bill. So this is not a law. This is just a proposal, right?
Yes. So this bill was introduced by Senators Elizabeth Warren and a Representative Deborah Ross. So they introduced this week a Ransom Disclosure Act, and it wants to set some disclosure requirements for people and companies affected by ransomware, because as we've talked about before on the podcast, ransomware has been rising. Mm-hmm. We've had a lot of incidents this year.
We have so, indeed.
Yeah. So the main kind of nugget of the bill is they want victims of ransomware who do actually pay their attackers, they want them to report this payment within 48 hours. And it sounds like they will be reporting it to Homeland Security.
Okay.
They say this would include the amount of ransom demanded and paid, the type of currency, and any known information about the attackers. And then DHS would also publicly share this information disclosed during the previous year. And then it also wants to direct the Secretary of Homeland Security to conduct a study on common things among these ransomware attacks and the extent to which cryptocurrency is used as a form of ransom payment.
Interesting. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we'll see where that goes. And one of the things I did notice in your article was that between 2019 and 2020, ransomware attacks rose 62% worldwide and 158% in North America. So yeah, that's a lot. So yeah, it's going to be, I think part of what we're going to end up against, I think, is people who don't always necessarily understand what it is that this is actually going to be dealing with. So hopefully most people will just figure out that it's actually a good thing and it's a thing that we should do. And yeah, hopefully,
I think the impression that I get from this bill is maybe if they have exact dates on when the money passes hands, maybe it would help them in their tracing efforts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that that might be part of why they want to put the window on the reports, because then they can narrow it down a little better, find out a little more. So that's also an interesting piece of information. Now, because it wouldn't be Security Friday without one, we have This Week in Hacks. But this one is like also because it's Friday, like we have a little flashback Friday situation happening here, I think.
Do we?
Well, it said they finally admitted it, but that it was an action that the hack actually was 5 years ago.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I gotcha. So, yeah. So this report comes from Motherboard. They found that this company that none of us, probably none of us have ever heard of, it's called Cineverse, and they act as sort of a hub for the telecommunications infrastructure with ISPs and carriers like AT&T, T-Mobile, Verizon. They help route all the text messages that get sent around the world. They've been hacked.
I'm shocked.
Yeah. So they say, I think they said, if I can find the date, that they were hacked in 2019.
Okay.
No. Okay. So they wrote in this report, I think it might have been a report to the SEC. They say they discovered this breach in May 2021, but the hack began in May of 2016. And it sounds like maybe the hackers were in the system a while. That's why they say it began.
You think? Yeah.
Yeah. So they say... So Cineverse repeatedly declined to answer questions from Motherboard about this, like the scale of the breach and specific what specific data was affected. But they say, according to a person who works at a telephone carrier, whoever hacked Cineverse could have had access to metadata, such as the length and cost of the SMS, the caller and receiver's phone numbers, the locations of the people in the call, as well as the actual content of the text messages. So pretty serious stuff.
Yeah. So that was part of why I was wondering about it. And apparently this is what I get for, you know, trying to be trendy and talk about it being Flashback Friday. It's so far, like, it's a lot of metadata, at, except for text messages, like it would be the content of those messages. But as far as the actual calls, it's not like it's recordings of the calls or anything like that. So still not great. And apparently it's been out there for some time. So, yeah, fantastic. That's
it is a little scary. So another quote that they shared, Motherboard, is they talked to an anonymous telecom industry insider. He says, with all the information, for example, I could build a profile on you. I'll know what you're doing, who you're calling, what's going on. I'll know when you get a voicemail notification, who mail, how long that voicemail was left for, et cetera, et cetera. And then he finishes with, I'll know more about you than your doctor.
Yeah, that's not alarming in any way. Right. So fantastic. Yeah, that's... That yeah, there. It's not like there's not stuff to be concerned about with this, but like overall, yeah, there we've definitely reported on way worse data breaches, I guess is what I would say. So, we'll go with that. So, right now, however, before we get to our big topics this week, I'd like to take a minute and talk to you about our sponsor, who is ZocDoc, and ZocDoc is a service. And sometimes when you need a doctor, like. The point of having to look for one now is because you need one right now. So instead of having to make a bunch of calls and wait on hold and do a bunch of searching to find a doctor who's in your area and is on your insurance and accepting new patients and might have an appointment anytime soon, you can let ZocDoc do all of that legwork for you. So if you use it, it will search local doctors who take your insurance. And you can also read verified patient reviews to help you narrow down who you want to call in the first place. And you can book an in-person or video appointment. And not just that, but wait, there's more. So it's not just for primary care. If you need a dentist or a psychiatrist or a dermatologist, they have lots of specialists available as well. So all you have to do to make this happen is go to ZocDoc.com/TDO and download the ZocDoc app, and you can sign up for free and book a top rated doctor. So that's ZocDoc.com/TDO. And I'd like to thank ZocDoc for sponsoring the show today. Now, with that, we've got a big story to talk about this week. And that is Twitch got hacked. And like, again, this week in data leaks, Twitch information was published to the internet, but not just about people who use it or about the accounts or about the payouts, but the source code for Twitch itself was also part of that.
Right. So this is from Video Games Chronicle. They were the first, I think, to report on this. Twitch itself got leaked. They say an anonymous... Oh, Twitch has confirmed this, by the way, so yes, it's real. Some hacker leaked a 125 gigabyte torrent link on 4chan, which had the source code as well as some user payout information. So first of all, definitely change your passwords. And if you don't already have it on your account, you should add some two-factor authentication, maybe with one of those YubiKeys we talked about.
Yeah.
So they gave a whole list of some of the information included. So first, the entirety of Twitch's source code with the code commit history going back to its early beginnings.
Yikes.
Some creator payout reports from 2019, Twitch clients like mobile, desktop, console, some proprietary SDKs and some of this AWS services they use, and every other property that Twitch owns too, including, as they mentioned, IGDB and CurseForge. And this part was a little scary. Their internal red teaming tools were also included. And yes, red team is kind of like penetration testing. It's where a group of employees pretend to be bad hackers and they try to break into their systems looking for holes that actual bad hackers could find an exploit and then fix them. So that's not good, because I'm sure that has information on, you know, how to break into Twitch in the future.
Right, because here's the things that we think are weaknesses, which is what we gave the red team to go to town on in the first place. Like, here's the things we want to make sure that you're stressing. That's usually how red team stuff works. So that was most of what I was worried about with this, was that seems really bad. You did mention they put this out on 4chan, which is not a place I would recommend that anybody go spend any time. Which is part of why it was funny that they were like, well, the Twitch community is terrible, so we're going to go post everything from Twitch on 4chan. Feels like you were so close.
The 4chan post from the hackers: the leak was intended to foster more disruption and competition in the online video streaming space because, quote, their community is a disgusting, toxic cesspool regarding Twitch. And as Kelly said, they posted this on 4chan. And if you know anything about 4chan, you probably know more than you want to.
Yeah.
So
if you know anything more than I'm not supposed to go to 4chan, then I'm sorry. that's really what it comes down to. As you said, Twitch has confirmed this. If you have a Twitch account, at a minimum, change your password. At a maximum, you should definitely look at doing something like setting up the YubiKey or some really solid two-factor. You can always do the sub-addressing thing that we've talked about on Daily Observations, where you had a plus sign to the end, or use privacy.com, you know, Apple's disposable email addresses, like whatever you need to do so that you can turn off the Twitch one. That's a good idea for any service. But this is exactly why those sorts of things are good ideas, is because now, like, oh, my Twitch address got I'm gonna you know, disable it or turn it off, and now you don't have to worry about if anybody's using it for anything. So
Or you could just do what I did. I really only ever watched one streamer once in a while, so I just disabled my account.
Yeah, also a good option if you're like, oh yeah, do I have a Twitch account? I think I signed up. Go delete it. Go disable it, and you'll be better off. So we have one more thing to talk about. We have a couple of minutes, and this is something that's coming. And so again, like, this is sort of a, like, we started with some good news. I think we're ending with some good news, which is a standard.
Yeah.
Anytime we can establish a standard for a thing, I'm always happy about it. And we've established one.
We have. So the International Organization for Standardization, otherwise known as ISO, they have approved and published a standard regarding mobile driver's licenses and mobile IDs. So Apple had announced this with iOS 15. In states that support it, you can upload your driver's license into Apple Wallet. Which, one of the concerns that I had, and also I've seen people online talk about it, is what if I get pulled over by a police officer? I don't want to hand them my entire phone over so they can, you know, look at my driver's license information. But that's not how it works. So Apple has already said that aside from the card showing up in Apple Wallet, there won't be any visual representation of the data like the physical card. And with this standard, it has some like privacy aspects in place. So for example, you wouldn't need to hand over your whole phone. The police officer eventually, or TSA or whoever it is, they would have some kind of special device to scan the data via, I don't know, NFC or Bluetooth. So it would be similar to an Apple Pay transaction. Some of the privacy aspects in this standard is you can control how much data you share with them. So for one of the examples they say is you can share the fact that one is older than 21 to buy alcohol, but you don't actually have to give them your full date of birth.
Nice.
Or let's see. It's resistant to tracking. They say there's no unique identifier to see where you've used your mobile driver's license. And it's also difficult to forge, they say, which is great. You don't want someone to forge your ID.
That's always a good thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Stored and shared documents are cryptographically protected against counterfeit, and verifiers can easily check the authenticity. So overall, like I mentioned in my article, there's more, but this is a lot. This sounds a lot better than I thought it would.
Yeah. That was part of what I was curious about with this, was the security piece of it. Like, you know, like as soon as I saw the headline go by, I'm like, well, I know Andrew's going to explain this, so I don't have to worry too much about finding out much about it. But I did sort of glance through for privacy things and found that, this sounds like it may have been set up by somebody who, actually know something about privacy and actually understands, like, here's the first thing everybody's gonna want to know, more or less. And it's nice to see that some of those protections have been built in automatically, like as part of the standard. So just like anything else, what we're gonna come up against, I think, is getting people behind the standard instead of building their own and saying, but this is standard. And we'll just use this instead. And that's the part that I worry about. But we don't have to worry about that
yet. I don't know if Apple's digital ID system components, I don't know if they probably aren't yet compliant with this standard. But they do say they've been working on this for over 6 years. So it's possible Apple was part of it, or at least offering suggestions or, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, we would have to, I'm not very interested in going and reading standards documentation. I've done it. I don't recommend it. If you have insomnia, by all means, do this. It will help. But so I don't know if Apple's part of it or not. I'm sure that as Apple's driver's license on your phone stuff starts to roll out, we will find out more about that. And we will tell you all about it here. So that's going to do it for us today. Thanks so much to everyone for tuning in. And as always, Andrew, thanks so much for coming by.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and have a good weekend, everyone.
Absolutely. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you on Monday. In the meantime, be excellent to each other. Let's be careful out there.